how do we do this again? I don't know. I just move my mouth and just hope that what happens next is not a disaster. Welcome to another episode of Pretty Much Random. I am Sammy.
I'm Ness.
And I'm Alex, your host this week. This week's topic is fucked up media.
You did say that you had something that was, what was it that you said that it was going to be? Not controversial, but...
provocative, for sure. It's going to definitely generate a lot of discussion and thought.
All right, let's get provoked.
So the first section I have, I kind of stole the idea from Ness, and it's called Reality or Not Really. Are these reality TV shows real, or did Alex make them up?
Okay.
I will read you the title and a synopsis of a reality TV show, and then you guys can tell me if it was real or not real.
This might get hard because reality shows have been around for a little while at this point, and the spectacle was already the point. And so, like, over time, they have to continue to escalate.
Okay. I want to marry Harry. 12 American women were manipulated into believing that they were competing for the affections of Prince Harry. The Bachelor was simply a lookalike, but that didn't stop him, the servants, or the production team from gaslighting the poor women into thinking he was the real Prince Harry.
No way that can be legal.
There have been a lot of these fuck with the contestants reality shows. I could see it happening, but I don't know.
No, that I'm saying not real. It's a great premise, though.
Sammy, I'm going to say it's real.
Okay, so I would Sammy watch it. Says, I'm saying not real.
Sammy says not real. Ness says real?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. It was real.
Damn, what?
It aired on Fox in 2014, and one contestant compared the gaslighting to brainwashing because the production staff even brought in a therapist to convince the women to stop doubting and asking questions.
No way!
Yes.
Oh my God. God, I would sue the shit out of them.
Right? What they should have.
Oh my God, I need to know more about this. What happened in the end?
I believe he ended up choosing one of the women, but then obviously they had to reveal that he was just an actor. It was an American dude. Like, he really did look like Prince Harry, or at least back then he did in the videos I watched.
Did he not talk like Prince Harry? Like, I mean, they had to interact at some point.
So not only did he have accent lessons, but he actually had lessons on royal etiquette, how to play polo. Like, they really trained this guy up to act like he was Harry.
That's fucking crazy. Oh my God. I would be so mad.
I want to know how none of the women stopped to think, like, no, the royal family would never sanction this. I'm not actually going to marry him because even if he is Harry, the royal family's not going to allow this to happen.
What kind of relationship is built on identity theft?
An interesting, a shaky one.
Yeah. Okay, so next show. Born in the Wild. Six couples chose to have their child outdoors. Locations included the Alaskan wilderness, over 150 miles from the nearest hospital, on the grounds of an out-of-season berry farm in Georgia, and outdoors during a snowstorm in the below-zero North Dakota winter.
I had a hard time keeping track of the different locations simply because I was still so gobsmacked by the premise. Holy shit. If you made that up, that's good. I don't know which one I'm hoping is true. That's just so crazy.
I'm gonna say not real based on morals and hope it isn't.
That's what I said last time, and I was so wrong. I'm gonna say it's not true.
So you both agreed that I made this up.
Yeah.
For the sake of humanity, I wish I did, but it was real.
Oh my God! What?
It was a six-part series on the Lifetime Network in 2015.
No, all right. Well, that's so defeated.
No.
Now,
how many people died?
Make
So that's one thing I do want to point out, because of entertainment law, like, obviously there is a set medic present, and because of health and safety laws, like, there were medical professionals present. So
where did you find this?
Some of these I sourced from a listicle that I was watching on WatchMojo. Not all of them, though, because then I was like, ooh, these are really interesting. I want to look up more crazy reality TV. So some of these came from my search, and then some of them came from when I searched on Wikipedia. Controversial media.
All right, I'm done being incredulous. Because at some point we have to move on.
All right, next one. Look, Ma, no hands. This wacky game show featured competitors facing off in a series of physical challenges, all while their hands were cuffed behind their back. Examples of challenges included eating the most donuts off of a string in 1 minute, recreating a famous painting, collecting the highest value of coins strewn around the studio, and preparing a full 3-course meal for a Michelin-starred chef, among others. All with no hands allowed.
Here's the thing. I want to say that's real. But, like, what if in this whole segment, only the crazy ones are real?
It sounds very plausible.
Yeah, I'm going to say real.
I'm going to say it's real, and it was hosted by the guy that played Carlton.
That's so specific. He did host some shows.
He did, yeah. Sorry, that one was fake. I made that up.
Oh, see, I knew it. All the crazy ones are going to be real, and all the mundane ones are going to be made up. That's so crazy.
That one I based off of a Taskmaster task, if you ever watched the show Taskmaster.
Oh, no.
The eating donuts off of a string with your hands tied behind your back was an actual live in-studio task that the contestants had to do.
I would just do that now.
I think we should do that at our next...
It doesn't have to be a contest.
Like, the next time we hang out, we should actually do that. That's really fun.
Eat a donut off of a string with our hands tied behind our back?
Yeah.
All right, I'll bring the cuffs.
Sweet. I would do... Wait, I have a pair of cuffs,
too. Ness has cuffs confirmed.
I do, too.
That's awesome.
Okay, next one is... Who's your daddy? 8 men competed to convince a woman who had been adopted that they were her biological father. The father was among them. After interviewing the men, the woman chose which one she thought was her dad. If she guessed correctly, she won $100,000. But if one of the contestants fooled her, that contestant won the $100,000.
I'm just going to say it's not true because I'm hoping it's not true.
It's probably true.
I love how Ness has already lost faith in humanity.
Yeah, that was straight Eeyore.
But yes, sadly, it was true.
Oh my god, come on.
It aired.
She at least get the money?
Yes, it aired on Fox in 2005. She guessed correctly, won the money, and was reunited with her biological father.
Oh my god, I still don't forgive it, but it's the only outcome that... Oh, man.
So we talked about the Prince Harry show being really manipulative.
Mm.
I watched clips of the show and I was like, this is horrible. I can't believe these men were really going hard trying to convince her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, was it one season with one contestant?
Yes, yeah.
How long did she have to, like, go through the agony of being like, one of these guys is my dad and I just don't know?
There were 6 episodes. Only one episode aired. There were supposed to be 6 episodes, but Fox shelved the remaining episodes after the opening special's modest ratings. And the following 5 episodes were later aired on the Fox Reality Channel.
I can't believe nobody would tune in to watch that.
Yeah, what a shocker. All right, ready for the next one?
Absolutely.
I guess
not.
What does my body do? 4 contestants attempted to guess what a person did for a living. The catch? They could not talk to the person. The person appeared in minimal clothing, exposing possible scars, bruises, or cosmetic surgeries that could indicate income level, manual labor, or possible tool usage. The contestants could ask the person to move in certain ways, as well as inspect the person's body closely without touching them. If a contestant guessed the correct job or a closely related field, they were awarded a point. And at the end of the season, whoever had the highest point total won $50,000.
The fact that it's in U.S. dollars.
This doesn't seem cruel enough to be real.
My initial thought was I could see this being a Japanese game show, but it's in U.S. dollars.
Oh, interesting.
I'm going to say...
I think you made this up, but it would be a good show.
I'm going to say fake.
I did make it up. It is fake, yes.
Wow.
But now I know what to pitch to Japanese reality TV.
Yeah, if you said it was yen, I probably would have said yes, that I believe it.
Dang it.
50,000 yen is like 50 bucks.
Okay, but you know what I mean, Ness. Apparently, I would have said yes, and Ness would have said no because of that.
I love that we're arguing about conversion rates. Okay, so the next section is discussion-based. based. It's not like any kind of guessing game. But I just thought it'd be interesting, since we just talked about TV shows, we're going to talk about fucked up plays, books, and movies now.
Okay.
So I'll just kind of talk about a piece of media. I'll kind of give you the, like, summary of it, and then you guys could just give me your thoughts.
Okay. This could get crazy.
Okay. Adore, starring Naomi Watts and Robin Wright. So two very big name actresses. Middle-aged Lil and Roz, who live next door to each other, have been best friends since childhood. Their sons, Tom and Ian, 18 years old, are also best friends. When Roz's husband moves away for business, Roz and Tom elect to stay in their beachside home so they can remain close to Lil and Ian. A little too close. After Ian and Roz sleep together and Tom finds out, he goes to tell Lil, only to end up sleeping with her. The mothers begin affairs with the other sons, affairs that span years. Eventually, they stop and the sons marry other women. However, it is eventually learned that Tom and Lil never stopped their affair, even through Tom's marriage. After the wives find out about the relationships, arguments ensue and the wives leave with the children. The story ends with the moms getting back together with each other's sons and the four continuing to live next door to one another.
Wait, hold on. This is... They are having an affair with each other's sons.
Yes. Who they... By the way, Lil and Roz have been best friends since they were children, so they have watched these boys grow up since infancy.
So they're both Mrs. Robinson.
Yes.
This is a real movie?
Yeah, so...
I wonder how it was received.
That I don't know. I didn't look up if it won any awards. I mean, It's got Robin Wright and Naomi Watts in it, and the performances in it are amazing.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yes. Fucked up plot aside, it is one of the best acted films, even by the supporting cast, that I have ever seen.
Okay.
In the storyline, Roz, which is Robin Wright, so if you guys don't know who that is, she played Buttercup in Princess Bride.
I was going to say, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. She's been in a lot of things, but, like, everyone knows Princess Bride.
Okay. Yeah.
So she repeatedly breaks up with Ian because she's the only one that's like, this is not right, this is not okay. But she keeps doing it anyway, so maybe that makes her worse.
Damn.
But because she keeps breaking it off, the actor playing Ian, which his name is Xavier Samuel, he's been in a couple other things, but he plays angsty and angry so well. Like, literally cries at one point, and it is so believable.
Is the ending presented as, this is the result you should be rooting for? Or, like, look at this messed up situation that's going to keep going to the chagrin of the audience?
In the book, it is repeatedly talked about how awful it is and how scandalous it is. But in the movie, even though the two older women do talk about that, it's almost presented like a good thing in the movie, which is really bizarre. So,
how old were they?
The boys were 18.
Well, you know, they wrote that shit, I guess, in the script. You know, they wrote that shit in the script, like, we have to at some point say that they're 18.
Does it end with a freeze frame and the power of love playing?
No. It should end up with sirens and the police coming to arrest them all.
I mean, technically nothing they're doing is illegal.
That's true, but it's just so gross.
It is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's a crazy premise.
Horrible.
If they reversed the genders, people would have been, like, up in arms.
That is absolutely correct. This is a bad, like, story altogether. Okay, are we good to move on?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one's a play. I'm probably mispronouncing it slightly just because I don't speak this language, but I believe it is pronounced Bezti, and it means dishonor. It was written by Gurpreet Kaur Bhatti. It is about, this one's a little hard to follow, so I'm going to try to make this as easy as possible. Elderly Balbir and her daughter Min, who is an adult, have a difficult and tempestuous relationship. Though both six, they have been largely ostracized by the local Sikh community following the suicide of Balbir's husband Tej some years before. Seeking to secure her daughter's future, Balbir asks a respected Sikh figure, Mr. Sandhu, to look into potential marriage partners for Min. It emerges that Mr. Sandhu had been conducting a gay affair with Balbir's husband Tej, and that Tej had killed himself out of shame that it could be revealed. Mr. Sandhu goes on to rape Balbir's daughter Min in the temple, known as a Gurdwara, though this is covered up by the Gurdwara leaders. Balbir later kills Mr. Sandhu with a kirpan, which is a dagger that is a mandatory article of faith for Sikhs, and Min starts a relationship with Elvis, her mother's black care worker. It was canceled on opening night because protests against it turned violent. The protest organizers stated that they didn't condone the violence that broke out. They were just there protesting because they wanted the script rewritten so that no scenes happened in the Gurdwara. They were not going to contest the rest of it, the really bad plot lines, but they were upset because the temple is a very sacred place for them, and this horrible act happened in the temple.
Wait, the movie was canceled?
It was a play, but yeah.
The play. Okay, okay, okay.
So it premiered...
After one night?
Not even after one night.
So damn.
Yeah. So it was canceled on opening.
How do you spell the play?
Behzti.
You can cut this out if you think okay. You need to. But there was one time my dad and I think mom was with us. We were out somewhere and we were looking for a place to eat. And we're like, oh, that looks like it might be a restaurant. And we drove in. And we got in the parking lot, and it was a temple.
I remember you guys talking about this because it was the Golden Temple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We were so disappointed, but everybody who was walking by, obviously, we had slowed down to figure it out, and they must have been able to read the confusion on our faces, but they were like smiling and waving.
So
yeah, it was pretty funny.
Ness, do you remember the night that we were geocaching and we had to do the century challenge thing and you had to do it the next day because it wasn't letting you geocheck?
Yeah.
Okay, so that night, do you remember when we found the one in the pine trees?
Yeah.
We were right next to that temple and we were trying to figure out what the statue was. Wasn't it an elephant or something?
Yeah, there was a few different animal-shaped statues strewn about.
Yeah, I didn't realize until later that that's what the building had been, but it was that temple.
All right, I derailed it again.
No, that's good. It's pretty much random. It's always going to be derailed. Okay, so speaking of Elvis, this is a film called Hound Dog, and it stars Dakota Fanning, and again, Robin Wright. She's in a lot of fucked up media. 12-year-old Llewellyn lives in poverty with her super strict maternal grandmother and her alcoholic father, Lou. Llewellyn's love of Elvis helps her cope with the trauma of her dismal life. After the dad is struck by lightning, which leaves him cognitively impaired, Llewellyn consoles herself with the fact that Elvis will be coming to town to perform. A friend tells Llewellyn that the local milkman has an extra ticket to the concert, which he will give to Llewellyn if she performs an Elvis dance for him. The milkman rapes Llewellyn. The trauma.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, it. And
sorry.
She's 12. Remember, she's 12. The trauma of which manifests as a serious illness. As such, the milkman ends up taking Llewellyn's best friend to the concert instead. After her mentor learns about the rape, he encourages Llewellyn to find her voice again by having her sing the song Hound Dog. She manages to do so, moving her mentor and his bandmates to tears. Llewellyn eventually leaves town with her maternal aunt, which is Robin Wright, leaving her old life behind her.
That kind of reminds me of, like, Boys Don't Cry a little bit.
Oh, that movie ruined me!
Did it really?
Oh, it hurt so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So, listeners, if you don't know what Boys Don't Cry is, it's the true story of Brandon Tina, who was a transgender man in the 90s who started dating a woman, and the girlfriend found out that Brandon was transgender but didn't care, and they continued dating. Well, then somehow, I don't remember how exactly, but the ex of the girlfriend found out as well, and him and his buddies come and sexually assault the women and then murder them in front of I think the kid is 2 or 3, and the kid is left
alone. I forgot
about
that part.
Oh, yeah, the ending is horrid. The kid is left alone in the house, which is a bloodbath, sobbing hysterically.
Yeah.
It's horrid.
I actually don't know what the most fucked up movie I've seen is.
The most fucked up movie ever is called A Serbian Film. Do not watch it. I was going to include it on here.
Should I be afraid to even ask what it's about?
I got to Google the premise again because I stopped reading midway through because I was so upset by it.
I think the movie I remember watching that I recoiled from the most is Hostel.
Oh, I've never seen it. Thank God.
I'm pretty sure Ness and I saw it together. Or maybe it was,
I have vague recollection.
Oh, you do remember that?
Maybe. I don't know. I know I've seen Human Centipede. That was not a good time.
I've not seen that. I was like, I opted out of that shit.
Yeah, I refuse to ever watch that movie.
Is it as fucked up as we imagine it is?
It is unnecessarily gross.
Okay, so a Serbian film is an exploitation horror film about a financially struggling porn star who agrees to participate in a, quote, art film, only to discover that he has been drafted into a snuff film, which is a film that kills people, with pedophilic and necrophilic themes.
Why would this movie exist?
It's been banned in several countries.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
It received an NC-17 rating in the U.S.
Is X not a thing? Is that really okay for 17-year-olds? Is there nothing above NC-17?
But the NC-17 rating for a Serbian film was with cuts made to the movie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, back to Hound Dog. Dakota Fanning, I hope that she has gotten some therapy from having participated in this film.
Really? That bad?
Well, the way that they do the rape scene, you see the guy push her down and hit her and stuff. So she's laying on her back and the camera's above her and it's just a close-up of her face. And Dakota Fanning, as a child, by the way, did such a good job of selling that moment and her face in that, like, it felt real and it was awful. And that's where I turned it off. I've not seen the rest of the movie because I couldn't get past that.
Yeah, I get it. The craziest movie I might have seen might be Short Bus. One of the opening scenes is a guy trying to suck his own dick, and you're like, what is this movie going to be? What is happening?
Okay, so you guys know how much I love Misha Collins.
Yeah,
sure.
So he was in an episode...
Did he try to suck his own dick?
He was in an episode... of Nip Tuck,
where he sucked his own dick.
He didn't, no, he's clothed in the scene, but he proves that it is possible with contortion, and he actually, like, gets his face to his crotch area. It's really impressive.
So the answer is yes, he sucked his own dick.
Well, we don't know that he did, because he's clothed when he does that, that demonstration. But honestly...
That's not a skill you discover in the moment.
Oh, man. Who did you say this was again? Adrian Brody?
Misha Collins.
Misha Collins, that's right. Why did I get Adrian Brody? I can, you know what? I can, you can see it. Come on. They get off my back. They look similar.
They don't look similar, but I can see it because Adrian Brody is tall and willowy.
Yeah, exactly. And tall and willowy, they both have brown hair. Or dark hair, at least.
Okay.
Dark
and not black. They both have their own dick.
They both have their own dick.
What's the rating on this podcast?
NC-17.
Yeah, after this episode?
Oh my golly. Okay, are we good to move on?
Yeah.
Sure.
So this next section is popular songs that people didn't realize were super fucked up. I'm going to tell you the song and then you'll tell me what it's about, okay?
Oh, I can't. That sounds fun.
I just want to make a quick note. I had a whole section on, like, controversial songs, but some of them were so messed up and hateful that it made me sick, so I switched it to a more lighthearted topic, but the original was bad.
I can't imagine.
Bro, rip your internet history.
Yeah, the FBI is listening right now.
Yeah, were you using a VPN?
No.
And that brings us to our first sponsor.
NordVPN, who 100% did not sponsor this. Please don't come at us unless it's with an offer, and we will say yes.
All right, so we know who's in charge of marketing. All right, so if you don't know what any of these songs are, just let me know, and I'll sing a little bit of them. But the first one is...
That's a really easy way to get you to sing all of them. It's a dangerous thing to have said to me.
I can if you want.
I'm kidding.
Okay, so the first one is This Land Is Your Land by Woody Guthrie, released in 1945.
Didn't realize how modern that song is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have guessed a lot older.
Yeah. So what do you think it's about?
I just hope it's the worst, because I remember singing this in elementary school.
I love that they had you singing this in elementary school.
Hell yeah. I'm going to say it's about America taking the Native Americans' land. We're just going to say that.
That's not a bad guess.
Damn.
Yes, so I'm going to say something about, like, religion. Like, this land is for Christians.
Ooh, that's a good guess.
I really like both of those interpretations. Does it
manifest destiny?
Does it change if I repeat again that it's by Woody Guthrie?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So Woody Guthrie is the man that you always see the acoustic guitar where it's written, "This machine kills fascists." That's Woody Guthrie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And remember, this was released in 1945 amidst the tail end of World War II.
Yeah.
It was his reaction to the song God Bless America because he felt that most Americans don't feel blessed and that wealth should be distributed more evenly among the masses. One of the lost verses goes, "In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. By the relief office," which is like the welfare office, "I seen my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me?"
Damn. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Communism.
How punk rock of him to have that written on his guitar before punk rock existed.
Oh, Woody Guthrie is one of my, like, folk heroes, as in folk singer heroes. Let me read you the titles of some of his other songs that he has. "Tear the Fascists Down," "Talking Dust Bowl Blues," "All You Fascists Are Bound to Lose."
Damn.
He's the OG badass. I love Woody Guthrie so much. So the next song, and again, I'll tell you the song, you guys tell me what you think it's about. "Sugar Pie Honey Bunch" by the Four Tops, released in 1965.
I just thought it was a love song.
"Can't help myself, I love you and nobody else." Is it stalking?
Oh, that'd be amazing if it was like...
What'd you say?
Is it stalking? Like,
it is not. It is about a man who cannot move past a woman who keeps stringing him along and leaving him. He takes her back time and time again, even though she's emotionally abusive. Lines include, "In and out my life, you come and you go, leaving just your picture behind, and I've kissed it 1,000 times.
It's the Brennan Lee Mulligan.
What?
The first person he ever slept with, he broke up with and got back together like 9 times within the space of like a year.
Oh my God. What the fuck? I can't even imagine.
Yeah, he talked about it on some show. It's impressive in a sad way.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. "I love you and nobody else."
Okay. So the next one is "Lola" by The Kinks, released in 1970. Do you guys remember that?
No, I don't remember that one.
Okay, so the song is "Lola, la 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 Lola."
Oh, that was I didn't know that was The Kinks.
Yeah.
I'm going to say "A Cheating Woman." I don't know the lyrics that well.
It's a crossdresser, isn't it?
Yes. It is about a teenage boy's relationship with a transgender woman whom he did not realize was transgender at first.
Okay. I don't know if they trans or just crossdressing.
I think...
But it's right in the song, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't remember the lyrics.
So here are some lyrics. This might jog your memory. "Lola smiled and took me by the hand and said, dear boy, I'm going to make you a man. Well, I'm not the world's most masculine man, but I know what I am, and I'm glad I'm a man. So is Lola."
Hey, you know what? Would.
Yeah.
So
would, okay. wouldn't this stop me?
Wouldn't stop me. So the song was released in 1970 and it was banned by the BBC for using the words Coca-Cola because that was against its product placement policy.
That's so this. Funny.
They
That's
changed so it to like cherry cola or something, didn't they?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Sad
I like cherry cola better anyway.
Well, there you go. But yeah. Good job, The Kinks. All right, this is...
Oh, it's right there in the band name.
Oh my God, that's
so hilarious.
So, the next one. This isn't necessarily fucked up. It's just a wildly misunderstood song. But Crocodile Rock by Elton John, which was released in 1973.
I didn't know that was Elton John, actually. Yeah. Good for him. That's awesome, Elton John. I'm happy
You're really
for
going
him.
Places.
Yeah. Someday everybody's going to know his name. Yeah, I know. I know the chorus.
Okay. Okay. So the song.
So the song.
Yes. The song is, a man is depressed that his girlfriend left him for someone else, so now he longs for the good old days when they danced the Crocodile Rock together.
Aww.
Yeah, that's very sad. Lines include, but the years went by and Rock just died. Susie went and left us for some foreign guy. Long nights crying by the record machine. So it sounds upbeat and fun, but when you listen to the lyrics, you're like, wow, this is depressing.
Poor guy.
I've been crying for years.
Yeah, it's a classic heartbreak song.
So, December 1963, Oh What a Night by the Four Seasons, released in 1975.
It's a good song.
It is a good song.
One Night Stand would be my first guess.
You're not far off.
Yeah, I have no idea. I would have said that.
It is about a teenage boy losing his virginity to a much older woman.
Oh, that is kind of fucked up.
It is fucked up, yeah. Lines and
is it his friend's mom?
We have come full circle. No. So lines include, oh, what a night. You know, I didn't even know her name, but I was never going to be the same. I got a funny feeling when she walked into the room, and as I recall, it ended much too soon.
He sounds like he doesn't sound too traumatized, at least.
Okay. So Afternoon Delight by the Starland Vocal Band, released in 1976.
Oh, I mean, everybody knows what an Afternoon Delight is.
I guess it's not that fucking good.
It's about getting that.
Yeah.
I do believe this is a bit from Glee.
From Glee.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Yep. In fact, wasn't that the episode or one of the episodes with John Stamos?
It's possible.
I don't know that I've seen 20 minutes of that show.
Don't. You're not missing
that. That show could fill a podcast with how messed up it is.
That's true.
Like, how messed up it is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It deals with...
It's too much to go off on.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's true.
Really? Okay.
Okay. I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats, released in 1979.
Garfield.
What?
Garfield.
He doesn't like Mondays.
Yeah.
Oh, he does. He doesn't like Mondays. It's true.
I actually don't know this song.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know if I do either.
Okay, well, now I have to play it because I know you guys know this song. Okay, here you go.
I don't think I've ever heard this song, have I?
I don't think I have either.
Seriously?
It sounds almost like a musical number.
It sounds very 70s.
I'm stunned. I grew up loving this song and not knowing what it was about. So it is about the actual real-life occurrence of an elementary school shooting in San Diego by 16-year-old Brenda Spencer in 1979. And if you remember, the song was also released in 1979. The school shooting happened on January 29th, and the song was released as a single on July 13th.
Man, no.
So, Brenda Spencer did shoot some kids. None of the kids died, but she did kill the principal and the head custodian. So, I just imagine, like, those people's families hearing this song and being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But the reason it's called I Don't Like Mondays is when they asked Brenda Spencer why she did it, her exact quote was, I don't like Mondays. This livens up the day a bit.
What the fuck? That's crazy. That's crazy.
Some lines from the song include, and I cannot believe this was ever on the radio, school's out early, and soon we'll be learning, and the lesson today is how to die.
What?
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay,
subtle.
My mind just turns to Jeremy by Pearl Jam.
Oh, that's fascinating, because the next song is a Pearl Jam song, but it's not Jeremy. But, yeah, Jeremy is a very similar song, you're right. It is about a kid lashing out and hurting others. So the next song is Even Flow by Pearl Jam, which was released in 1992. And you'll recognize the song when I sing the parody version of it that everybody sings, which is...
It's so true, though. It's so true. He's got such a distinctive voice.
He does. Mm.
I feel like it's about a crazy guy.
That is an excellent guess. Goodness.
Like a homeless guy.
Yeah. Well, Sammy just keeps zeroing in. Well done.
It is about crazy homeless guy.
It is about a mentally ill homeless man who is struggling to survive. Lines include freezing, rests his head on a pillow made of concrete again, feeling maybe he'll see a little better set of days. Oh, hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. handout, faces that he sees time again ain't that familiar. Dark grin, he can't help when he's happy, he looks insane.
I need to listen to Pearl Jam again. It's such a good song.
It is such a good song. And when you know the lyrics, it's fun to sing along because it's freezing, rests his head on a pillow made of concrete again.
He does this thing where he's on target for sure, but he's got like this warbliness to it that it's like water.
Yeah, it's his voice is really steady.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think warbly is the perfect way to describe it because it's not vibrato, but it's like almost.
Well, you know, he'll like fall off of notes a lot.
Oh yeah.
Thoughts arrive, but it's very like not lazy, but just like easygoing almost.
Mm, yeah.
When we covered Jeremy, I emulated the style, his style as much as I could. Just because it's such an iconic song, you can't do anything different with it, I feel like.
I forgot that you covered that.
It was my first cover.
Well done.
I remember that.
You know Eddie Vedder's real name?
I didn't know.
No, I didn't know that wasn't his real name.
Yeah, I thought that was his real name.
He was born Edward Louis Severson III.
I can see why I went with Eddie Vedder.
I wonder why Vedder. Because, like, Jennifer Aniston, her real last name is Anastasakis because she's Greek, but she anglicized it to Aniston so that it was easier to pronounce.
I have the answer if you want to know.
Yeah, go ahead.
So he was born Edward Louis Severson III, but his parents divorced when he was an infant. He was raised by his stepfather, so he actually went by Edward Mueller for a while. But then in high school, he changed it to Eddie Vedder. Vedder being his mother's maiden name.
Oh.
Okay, so it's personal, I guess.
That makes sense.
He's also gone by Jerome Turner and Wes Addle. Jeremy Spoken.
All right. Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind.
I have no idea. I never really listened to the lyrics.
I'm trying to think.
I wish you could get back there, some back there.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Reminiscing about something, maybe?
It is about a coke addict's descent into crystal meth addiction, which ruins his life.
Oh,
okay.
Lyrics include, the sky was gold, it was rose, I was taking sips of it through my nose, and I wish I could get back there, someplace back there, smiling in the pictures you would take. Doing crystal meth will lift you up until you break it.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I can hear it.
It really do be like that. Yeah, that's so true. I can hear it too. I know exactly.
Because he says it so fast. It's doing crystal meth, I'll lift you up until you break it. Like,
put it in the bucket.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me.
There's literally a line where he says, I want to get back there to the place where I fell asleep inside you because he passed out while he was high in the middle of sex.
It's such a bop. It's such a feel-good song.
It's
so funny. Like, it doesn't match the tone.
That is the, like, Third Eye Blind equivalent of me and the way that I sang Even Flow earlier.
Yeah.
So, Hey Ya by Outkast, which was released in 2003.
Oh, I actually have no idea at all.
I'm going to sing my way through the lyrics. Something about photography. I know there's Polaroids in it.
Oh, that's right. Shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Is it like early nudie trading or taking pictures of themselves naked? I don't know.
No, it is about being stuck in a loveless relationship, but holding on because you don't want to admit it's over.
Oh, well, we've all been there.
That's another one that I'm like, yeah, but it's such a bop.
It is.
Yeah, lyrics, really is.
Lyrics include, we get together, oh, we get together, but separate's always better when there's feelings involved. If what they say is nothing lasts forever, then what makes love the exception? So why, oh, why are we so in denial when we know we're not happy here? All right, so the next one. Wake Me Up When September Ends by Green Day, released in 2004.
I feel like that's about depression, maybe.
Close.
Somebody dying?
Yeah. The memes about this piss me off so hard that that's why I included this. The song's not fucked up.
There are memes?
Oh, God, there are so many memes. So when September starts, people are like, oh, remind me 30 days, wake up Billy Joe Armstrong. And then at the end of
That's such a dad joke.
Oh, it is. It is. And then at the end of September or even into October, people will post, did anybody wake up Green Day yet? Ha ha ha. So he wrote the song, Billy Joe Armstrong wrote the song about his father's death. So his dad died when he was only 10 years old.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his dad died in September that year. And it's about Billy Joe Armstrong's overwhelming grief and his desire to get away from drowning in sadness every year on the anniversary of his death. That's why it makes me so mad, because I'm like, dude, this is a genuine song about trauma and grief. And he put it out there so, like, people who've been through it can identify. Yeah, and then people mock it. Like, oh, I hate that.
Changing it with this podcast.
I hope so. Anyways, yeah, that's all I got.
I have fun. I always have fun.
Yeah, it's always very fun. Editing sucks, but this part's fun.
I was waiting for Turning Japanese by the Vapors to come up.
Of course you were.
I know what we're talking about next week, or 2 weeks from now. A whole episode about Glee.
Oh, are you seriously?
I mean, and I was kidding, but we really could. It is a messed up show.
Is it really?
There is an episode where they do Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's high school Glee club.
Why would they do that?
so they can get the actors in their underwear.
Oh, God.
So true.
And they're supposed to be children. So gross.
Granted, they all look 40, but still.
Man, I will never forget my parents coming to see Hair.
I remember
that. There are so many scenes in Hair that are just like so out of pocket. You know, it's not every day you have to consider that your parents are going to have to watch you in a simulated orgy scene.
I did a play in college called Gint, and I was the quote-unquote female lead, and then the lead actor had to feel me up in a molestation scene, and we did it in a lecture hall classroom, and my dad was right in the front row. He was about 10 feet. Luckily, the guy that played the male lead in rehearsals before he ever touched me was like, is this okay? And I was like, yes, and you can go full on. I don't care. I trust you because I know it's not you, it's the character. So, like, we really sold that scene with the molestation. It was bad.
Pretty sure I have a, like, super old-ass copy of the book that's based on.
Oh, really? On Peer Gynt?
Yeah.
I should have included that in fucked up media, because that is fucked
up.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. Seriously.
Well, folks, thanks for listening to this episode about fucked up media on the podcast Pretty Much Random.